Welcome back again to another episode from SLMA Radio with our rotating series of shows. This week we're back to Laura Patterson and Ready, Set, Grow, where she interviews C-level executives from across various industries to discuss how they have organically grown their companies. These tell-all programs have focused on revealing tools and management techniques and tips the guests have used to fuel their above-average growth. So now that we've whet your appetite, let's see if we can dive right into the pool here with Laura and her guests. Hey, Laura.
Thank you, and welcome to the Ready, Set, Grow show. We are really excited about today's program. Just a reminder, our focus is on having members of the C-suite share their insights on what it takes to successfully achieve organic growth, the lessons they've learned throughout their careers, and the role they believe marketing needs to play in growth, and also how they measure marketing's contribution beyond this quarter's revenue. If you've missed any of the previous episodes, feel free to catch those in replay mode at visionedgemarketing.com. We're particularly excited today to have Becky Taylor with us. Becky and I both came to Austin right around the same time, 35 years ago, and we both had careers at Motorola here in Austin, so it's always wonderful to visit with an alum. Becky has been very much a part of the Austin startup scene, and most recently has been COO of SensorRx, which is in the healthcare software space. We'll talk a little bit more about SensorRx in a moment, but one of the other things about Becky is that she holds multiple patents. And I can, as a single patent holder, tell you that is a major accomplishment. Congratulations,
Thank
Becky.
You.
As I mentioned, Becky has been a COO of SensorRx. And SensorRx is a chronic disease management technology solution. They are focused right now on migraine headache management. I imagine a number of our listeners can relate to that. And the company, as COO, Becky was responsible for the first revenue, the securing funding, and getting the executive team in place. So she has a lot to talk with you about in terms of organic growth, because at that stage, it's all about organic growth. Becky, welcome.
Thank you. I'm very, very glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Our pleasure. We're delighted to have you as well. So, Becky, we're going to spend our few minutes together talking about growth. And as the COO for your company, you know, where do you think organic growth fell? And when you think about all your startup experience, where is organic growth in the mix?
Well, it's all over the place. You know, you don't have a company if you're not growing when you start with no employees and you go from zero to 20. Every day is all about growth. And, you know, there's three things that somebody told me once who's a lot wiser than I that I've adopted, and that is, you focus on getting the product right, you focus on getting the company right, and then you focus on getting your sales right. And you basically rotate amongst all those, often multiple times a day.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because that kind of ties into the conversation from Dave Sikora's episode when he was talking about product market fit. And I know you and know Dave as like I do.
Maybe we heard it from the same guy.
Anything is possible in Austin. We have a great community of folks.
Right.
So as you think about the various companies that you've helped build over the years, what do you believe are the biggest challenges that companies face who are focused on organic growth, not just in startup phase, but after you get those initial customers and you're all excited and you see that arrow going straight up like a hockey stick, and then the real work sets in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you maintain that momentum, and what are the challenges companies face?
Well, the biggest challenge for a startup is, once you land your first lighthouse customer, you're real focus needs to be on customer support, because, you know, the worst thing that can happen, particularly in this world of online social media comments, is that you have an unhappy customer. And so scaling that at the same pace once your product does catch fire is the one thing that I was the most concerned about in planning for the growth, for example, for my most recent startup, SensorRx. The application or building app space, the way in which the support challenge happens manifests itself a little bit differently, I think, than if your customers are large organizations like healthcare systems, which is what we were doing at SensorRx. But the challenge is huge in both cases. They just look different. In my view, planning for customer support scales kind of at the same pace as we add new healthcare systems, because it takes quite a while to add one of them. So you add a customer, scale customer support, add a customer, scale. Whereas with an app, you put it over the wall, and then if you're successful, you could be within a week trying to figure out how to support many thousand customers. So it's a big challenge in both environments, but it's a little bit different depending on your path.
Exactly, and I think that's a really important message here, because when you and I talk about true B2B, we really are talking about those complex, consultative types of products and solutions, large entities or even small entities, but with multiple buyers or multiple people associated with the buying process. It's not just an impulse buy. It's not a single person making a decision. There's multiple decision makers. There's multiple people in the influencing it. And the customer buying journey is certainly not linear, right? It goes, mm-hmm. It's a very non-linear process and has multiple steps and touch points before people make a decision. And so to your point, it's not just about the front end of the pipeline, right? And mm-hmm. getting the awareness and getting the engagement, but it's about the back end, which is the fulfillment and the customer experience, so that you can have those customers who will help you grow, right?
Right.
Because those serve as your references, as your referrals, but if you can't hold on to them, that's a problem. And then mm-hmm. secondly, I think I heard you say scaling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Scaling as you grow, which right. is always a challenge.
Right.
I think that's a challenge even as companies mature, is continuing to scale. You know, I think back to our days at Motorola, mm-hmm. once we got our feet in the door and we were really getting a lot of traction, then you have to really think about processes, which I know is one of your areas of expertise
mm-hmm.
as a COO. What are those processes that will enable us to be successful? That takes us to sort of, you know, if you're thinking about process, talking about organizational culture, right? Some companies are process oriented, some are not. So what do you think is the kind of culture that, you know, you've been in a lot of different companies and lots of different industries, even though predominantly in software and semiconductors technology, you know, very technology oriented.
Mm-hmm.
After all, we are in Austin.
Right.
But if you think about all the different kinds of companies you've been associated with over the last few decades, how would you describe the cultures of the ones that have been the most successful at growing organically?
Oh, boy. And it almost always, in addition to the organizational culture, it's the leadership style of the leader that is responsible for the effort, whether it's a division within a large company or CEO of a startup. Bold experimentation was the phrase that came to me. You need to encourage that on the part of every single member of the team, no matter what their level is. And what that can look like is, you have to be tolerant of people experimenting, and maybe something doesn't work out so well the first time, and you focus on the learnings. And I've seen that in environments like Motorola and in large organizations, oil and gas companies. I spent some time at Shell, so I'll use that as an example. Focus was very much on the learnings from an effort, in addition to wanting to have a successful outcome. The focus was, okay, what learnings can we capture as a result of that? And so if you encourage bold experimentation, you will punch through barriers a little bit faster, but you also are going to have some skinned knees that you need to be ready to patch up.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way of framing it. I agree with you. The companies that I have been associated with and the customers that we have the privilege of working with, they are willing to take a certain degree of calculated risk,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're comfortable with fast failures because they learn from those. So let's talk about three characteristics of a growth culture. So I heard one, if you want to stick with that one, which is about being willing to experiment.
Mm-hmm.
What would be another characteristic?
A focus on speed. You mentioned failing fast. That's one of them. Making sure that speed does not translate to shallow. So speed to close, whether that's first customer, whether that's a product release, whether that's your first trade show. But speed to close on a particular metric or milestone is much more straightforward to manage, and it allows you to declare success and failure in a shorter period of time than just thinking, well, if we give it another month. Picking a solid, concrete end game situation really is helpful. It takes a lot of the emotion out of some of these things, because people are often, you know, working way too many hours a week to get something done like this. And so sometimes your judgment gets a little bit skewed when you're not getting enough sleep, for example. So picking a concrete agreed on ahead of time milestone, at which time you'll decide whether or not to proceed. It's been very helpful.
Okay, so we got experimentation, we got speed. And what's another one?
And this is something where I hope we get to the topic of marketing, because it's part of the value of having marketing folks in the mix.
It's coming like right up.
Okay. And that is, embracing new information, keeping a 360-degree radar up, particularly for startups, but it's valid for any organization size. Is extremely key and critical to an overall organization's success, because things change, particularly in the last 5 to 10 years. The pace of change has really picked up. And so having sensitivity to that when that's happening in real time, as close to real time as you can, is super important.
We used to call that a periscope.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I love those three. That's great. So we've got bold experimentation, speed, failing fast, and then sort of keeping your pulse on what's going on in the marketplace and adapting to that. But I want to, before we go into to our break, a quick story, and I know you can relate to this. So this back to our Motorola days, I'm making commitments to customers, especially new customers. To your point, we were growing very rapidly. We were bringing new customers on. It's very, very easy when you're moving at that fast pace for things to slip through the cracks and fall into a black hole, as we used to call them. And so we got into the habit, and we first started this with concrete, of actually putting agreements in concrete and dates, so that people really understood what they were going to, what they were committing to in terms of managing those expectations and speed. And over time, we turned those into brass plaques, because concrete was a little heavy to ship around. Brass plaques, a lot easier to reproduce those and get those out. But, and everyone on the team that was associated with that particular win, right, design mm-hmm. win, signed it. So the customer, manufacturing, design, marketing, sales, everyone's kind of engineering is all really associated with that. So I love that you brought that back up about speed, failing fast, but also meeting commitments, working to those commitments. So we're going to be taking a break in a moment, but before we do, because I know that Paul's going to want to have a quick moment for our sponsors, is talk a little bit and introduce the topic of marketing, because clearly that's one of the things that we want to spend some time on. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
I thought really hard about this one.
All right, let's just take a quick moment out to remind you that Vision Edge Marketing works with Chief Executive Financial Marketing Growth Strategy Consumer Customer Insight Officers in all sorts of industries. Manufacturing, technology, financial services, medical devices, life services, you name it. Including transportation and logistics industries facing growth or performance challenges. Customers rely on VEM's expertise to make more effective and faster fact-based decisions regarding customers, markets, products, and competition. You can improve and prove the value of marketing, and they leverage data analytics processes and measurement to increase marketing's relevance and ability to deliver greater business impact. It's a mouthful, but it's amazing. If you want to learn more, it's visionedgemarketing.com, just like it sounds, visionedgemarketing.com. You guys do so many things. I can't seem to get them all out in 30 seconds here. So anyway, back to Laura and her guest here.
We're back. Welcome back, everyone. So let's talk a little bit about the role of marketing in organic growth.
So I've come to view marketing as a wonderful combination of science and black magic. And the science comes in figuring out how to measure things and planning campaigns and figuring out where all the data can come from and figuring out how to compare our company with the competitors or whatever capabilities are out there. But there's also a black magic and an art component to it that is what I think makes finding a good marketer of key importance to the early team for a startup, for example, or in any organization team within a large company. A good marketer becomes a go-to resource for an executive team. You know, you got a good marketer on your team when there's always somebody in their office asking them questions because they know stuff that's relevant to the mission of the other team members. It's more than PR. It's more than numbers. It's more than a fancy website. It's almost a crystal ball predictor function and brand, I've come to believe, in the last 5 to 10 years. has become critically important for technology companies, because folks have really gotten tired in the general public of trying to wade through very lengthy descriptions of what a technology does, and proper branding can take care of that and really help lever one company above another. If they have roughly similar technology capabilities, the brand is where it's at. So I've become very grateful for the skill sets that good marketing people bring to the mix.
Yeah, I think that's an important point that you're bringing up, that's the notion of science and art, the combination of science and art. As a marketer much more on the science side, I can certainly relate to the value that today, how important data is and analytics and insights from the market and insights from customers and insights in terms of what's going on with your competitors, and really being able to bring that into the conversation and talk about what that means for positioning the company, what that means for the value proposition, and how that translates into a competitive advantage, right? So that you can really begin to build that brand and reflect that promise, so that it makes it much easier in the buying process. If we short circuit that, and people do often want to short circuit that, they just want to go out and beat the bushes and start bringing people in, you know, to be potential customers. If you short circuit that process, you might get some customers. It'll be very opportunistic, but it might not give you a runway for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's true?
Very definitely. There's a predictor function that comes with being a great marketer, but actually what you're doing is you're predicting and then enabling what you've just predicted to happen, or facilitating, or in some cases causing the outcome that the marketing person has predicted. And so without that, it really is opportunistic. And you know, a very gifted engineering team and a very gifted salesperson can find good deals and grow a company. But in my view and in my experience, I have found that some combination of business development and marketing at an executive level is super important once you've got a product that's close to beta.
Right.
You know, you really, in terms of the right moment for bringing those folks on board. And this is, of course, talking from the perspective of a startup.
But you've been in larger entities as well.
Oh, yeah. And the timing, you can bring those folks on inside a large organization a little earlier just because you have more flexibility of resource.
And they stay. Know. The goal isn't just, this is not a one-time thing, right? You parachute in and then, you know, it's part of the long-term growth, right?
Yeah. It's not a come on in and define our branding campaign and hire all the advertising time and then go away. I mean, that's not the right way to use a good marketing resource.
Yeah, I would agree. So what is then the role? And if you think about it, how well do you think most marketers today, you know, one of the reasons I think you're such a great guest is you have had your hands in so many different companies as opposed to just being somewhere for a very long time. So you are always kind of aware of what's going on in different functions. As a COO, you need to know all aspects of the business. So if you're thinking about marketing, how well do you think, as you're looking out today compared to a decade or two decades ago, do you think marketing is today at being able to really be drivers of organic growth?
Well, it's really, as I said a minute ago, it's really a go-to resource. It's become a go-to resource for an executive team.
But how well do you think marketers today are able to fulfill that role?
Oh, well, I think that it's hit or miss is not the right phrase. I think the situation is much better now than it was 20 years ago. It was very rare for a marketing person to have had the opportunity to be exposed to technology in very many forms. And so it was a little bit of a long bridge, I'll say, between a product team and the marketing folks. And that was whether you were in a small company or a big one, it was pretty much that way. And I think that was more a manifestation of the age and stage of technology, because software had been around for, you know, probably about 20 years in any real form. And so it was pretty new for anyone who had not been in the process of developing software.
So what I think I'm hearing you say is for marketers to be really good at this, they kind of need to be really close to all the other parts of the organization.
Yes.
And they can't really distance themselves.
Right.
And that getting close and being a key part of the team is kind of important. So
it's a relationship play.
Yes. So what are two things that you, if you could make a recommendation to a CMO today or a marketing leader or professional today, that they could do better within the discipline to help drive growth? What would be two quick things that you would tell them to do?
Well, weaving together where things are now with where the future is, the potential, the plan, the go forward, the vision, is a big part of what a good marketing resource can do for a CEO.
So weaving right? together today with the future.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Today with tomorrow.
Okay.
And then, you know, leading the development of the measurements, the metrics to help the CEO, COO, and the rest of an executive team of which the marketer is a member, figure out how to monitor and manage the path towards the vision.
Right. So this is going to be more than looking at the pipeline then.
Correct.
It's going to have to be much bigger.
Right. You got to help come up with the, how you're going to measure that in a meaningful way.
Yeah, not just leads, conversion rate,
right.
even closed deals. It's got to be much up, much further upstream
yes.
in terms of the measures.
The things you're mentioning are the ante to the game, but it's not the game.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I so agree with you, Becky.
Okay.
All right, so we only have a few minutes left, and I know that, and I want to make sure that you have a moment to talk a little bit about your path to COO.
Okay.
And any insights that you'd like to share through your journey, that lessons learned or pearls of wisdom that you'd like to offer?
Oh, boy. In terms of the relationship with marketing and all the topics we've just been talking about,
nope,
or something more broadly than that?
I'll leave it open to
okay.
you.
Okay. We're at a very interesting time in technology. I serve as an advisor for Iowa State University Computer Science Program. We just had our annual meeting on Friday, and we're planning the 50th anniversary party for that department,
wow.
which is next year. We're at a shift moment where we're going from computer science being sort of this odd, new, very intriguing, very smart, weird kid of an industry to one that is much more mature, much more woven into every single thing that we as human beings are starting, you know, to do. You turn around and there's a piece of software involved. There's probably software in this microphone, you know, that we're talking through. So, you know, you can't get away from it. And so it's going to have to change. There's going to have to be more of a humanistic, you know, ethics is going to have to start coming into the conversation. Just because we can build something, does that mean we should?
We're back to machine learning and artificial intelligence.
Oh, yeah. So we need to start. That's a new step, big one, probably as big as any other step we've had in the industry in the last 50 years. So that would be my observation, is it's been a whole lot of raw invention for the first 25 years. And now for the last 15 or so, it's been a lot of adaptation. And now we're going to go for integration of all of that into our daily lives, and how do we want that to work?
I love that, the notion of innovation, adaptation, integration.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really
mm-hmm.
great message. Anything else that you'd like to have before Paul pulls the plug on us?
Well, my path to doing things is very Byzantine. I'm a recovered software engineer.
Right.
You know, your perspective changes when you go from being sort of, as we used to say at Motorola, you're looking at the world from inside the reticle, inside the machine. And so when you get more involved as an executive team member, you're looking more at the world from outside, which is a very different perspective indeed. It does make you, you know, sit back and take a break every once in a while to figure out what's important and how you can, you know, continue to contribute. And COO is a great role because every day is different.
Yes.
You know,
but you're in the business. Oftentimes CEOs
yeah.
are very external to the business. They're
yeah.
doing a lot of other things, but the COO is really hands-on
mm-hmm.
in the business,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
that, and be smart enough about most of the most key functions in order to be able to help those functions be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah, this has been great. Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you very much, Gail. And thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We appreciate you listening in. And if you have any questions, feel free to drop us a line. Till next time.
You've been listening to Ready, Set, Grow with Laura Patterson on the Funnel Radio Channel for at-work listeners like you.